Hello and welcome to Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo. I'm Ryan Bickle. And on today's show, we're going to talk to another staff conservation grant recipient. And her name is Dana Lane. And she is our aquarium supervisor here at Blank Park Zoo. And she was able to go to North Carolina and work with sea turtle rescues. And we're going to learn a lot about that. But before we do that, we're just going to talk a little bit about Blank Park Zoo. And Blank Park Zoo, of course, we're located on the south side of Des Moines, and we have, you know, close to 500,000 visitors, and a lot of people know us for the animals and love us because they come out with a family and have a great time, but we're more than just that experience. We have an education department, and we go to like every county every year all over the state of Iowa with our education programs. And we travel like 70,000 miles each year. We do library programs and summer reading programs and all that. We're all about teaching people about animals, how to save them in the wild. And then we also have this tremendous conservation department. And we have many, many projects that we work on every year. And some of it's just a supporting role. And so we support like tigers and rhinos in natural areas. And so how we do that is a portion of what we make when you come and visit the zoo goes to those organizations. And then there's some projects that we have, and you've heard us talk about it on this show before, like Plant Grow Fly, where we encourage people to plant pollinator habitat friendly plants. So butterflies and bees can thrive. And so, you know, you can go and find those shows and listen to those if you want to learn more about that. But today we have Dana Lane with us, and she is our aquarium supervisor. Dana, how many years have you been at Blank Park Zoo?
I have been here for 5 years.
5 years. Mm-hmm. And you have done, you're the aquarium supervisor now, but you started... you know, I remember you used to be in the sea lion department. Mm-hmm. And, you know, tell us what you've done along the way and how you worked your way into this current role.
Yeah, so I've been able to grow quite a bit here at Blank Park Zoo, which has been an awesome opportunity. Starting out, I was a part of our previous aquatics team. So I kind of got to move around, work with the pinnipeds, work with the Magellan penguins, our North American river otters, as well as all of the aquariums, amphibians as well. And in the last couple years, we decided to split that team so we could focus more on different species. So I was then promoted to supervisor of the aquarium side of our aquatics team. So now I get to manage 7 different aquariums, so fish exhibits, fish and aquatic invertebrates. So that includes corals as well. We also get to work really closely with our amphibian species and now several reptiles as well. So we've been adding to our collection and our team and kind of growing our base, and it's been a really exciting opportunity to grow and learn more and take care of more animals.
So what would be your favorite fish or animal that you get to take care of on a regular basis here at the zoo?
Oh, that's a hard question because I love them all. but my favorite animal to work with is our white spotted puffer. He lives in our fish-only reef exhibit. It's our largest exhibit. It's about 18,000 gallons. He is a big, if you ever walk up to the exhibit, you'll be able to point him out right away. He's very large and covered in white spots, of course. But he has probably the most entertaining personality of all the fish in our aquarium. And we actually go in on Saturdays for our Saturday dive chat, where guests can come and see us dive in the tank, feed the fish, and hear about coral and fish conservation. But we kind of have been working closely with him and having him do some fun behaviors with us while we feed him in the exhibit.
Yeah, you probably get more scuba diving experience in Des Moines, Iowa than anyone else in Des Moines, Iowa, right? Because
Yes.
You're always going in there to clean and maintain that tank.
And, oh, yeah. Yep, it's a lot of work, and we dive most all of our exhibits at least once or twice a month, so we get a lot of water time.
Sure. Well, and then the Pacific Northwest exhibit, mm-hmm. which is a cylinder, it's round. That one, isn't the water colder in that one?
Yes, so that one is about 55 degrees, so I do wear a little bit thicker wetsuit. I've got a nice hood to keep me warm, but it's still, every time I get in there, it's a little bit of a shock, but, you know, you get used to it, and we try to make it a quick, clean, short dive, so, but yep, it's always fun.
So, if you see Dana in one of the tanks, wave to her.
Yep.
And maybe she'll wave back if she's able.
So, oh, definitely.
And so let's get started talking about your trip. First of all, you had to apply for the grant. So yes. We don't just, we have a limited amount of funds that we can help people out with. And mm-hmm. we only fund about 2 to 3 grants a year. So tell us what that application is like. Mm-hmm. And, you have to have all your ducks in a row, don't you?
Yeah. So it is kind of a crazy, exciting time to fill out the application. So basically you have to think of what conservation project will I benefit most from and feel like I'm making a difference. And also on the other side of that, what's going to be helpful to them. You know, you don't want to be a burden on a organization and actually give them help as well. So I decided on the North Carolina Aquariums. There's actually 3 different aquariums. I was somewhat familiar with them because I worked with them in my last job with an outreach sea turtle program. And I knew they did a lot of really cool work with their sea turtle species that come to their beaches every year. And I just want to learn more about especially that project, but all of their conservation projects. And once I got there, I realized there was a ton. So basically, once I kind of decided what conservation project I wanted to work on, I put together the application. I reached out to the director and I said, hey, I'm really interested in coming and helping in any way that I can. Do you think I would be valuable? And he said, yes. So we worked together and putting the application all together, knowing that I may or may not get it. So that was kind of an exciting, scary time. But so once we got that all together, I submitted it to our conservation coordinator, Jessie, reviewed it. And she thought that I would have the most impact, I think, and be the most helpful. So my project was chosen for this year. Yeah. So it was very exciting.
Yeah, and along with Jesse, there's a whole team of people that review all mm-hmm. those applications. Yep. And, you know, there might be 10 applications that come in, and, mm-hmm. and like I said, maybe 2 get selected. So you got to make sure you got your budget set, and, mm-hmm. We look at the criteria of, is the project going to be valuable to the employee going and to the organization, mm-hmm. and will there be long-lasting effects and positive results of it.
Exactly.
So are some of the things that are looked at. And so you went through that process,
mm-hmm.
and that's like a year in advance.
Yep.
So you have time to get excited about the trip. So I guess walk us through a typical day when you're in North Carolina of what you did,
mm-hmm.
and then we'll get into some other stuff as well.
Yeah. So I didn't really know exactly how it was going to go, but it turned out really, really, it was great. I got to really put my hands in a whole lot of different projects. As I mentioned before, they do a lot of conservation work. But basically, I was lucky enough to find an apartment right across the street from the aquarium. So it was a quick drive over. They start their day there about 8 a.m., so I'd arrive at 8, check in, and kind of get to shadow each different aquarist. I believe they've got 10 aquarists, and that's just on the animal care side. They also have an education department, outreach department, all sorts of really cool aspects of their aquarium. So I'd meet up with one of them, kind of shadow their areas, see what animals they were working with today, do some feedings. I tried to make them let me clean, but they didn't want them to let me clean because they wanted me just to have all the fun. But I told them I would. But yeah, so I really got to see how their aquarium works on like a really good level, and kind of got some really good ideas of things that I can take back and implement in our aquarium here. And then they would take me around to different facilities that they were either partnering with or supporting for their conservation work. So one day I went to CMAST, which is their local science lab, Center for Marine Science and Technology. And it's students who are in college level students who get to work with aquaculture in an aquaculture lab setting. And so one of their big projects is figuring out how can they sustainably stock their exhibits. Instead of going out and collecting animals from the wild, how can we increase their population numbers in the aquariums and eventually maybe return some individuals back to the wild as well?
So, yeah, aquaculture, maybe mm-hmm. we should...
So aquaculture is basically breeding fish or invertebrates, marine invertebrates, under human care. So in an aquarium setting, it sounds simple, but there's a lot to it. There's a lot of really, really cool setups that aquariums are working towards to really make this beneficial and a conservation minded project. So a way that, again, so that we're not collecting from the wild, we're trying to be a little bit more conscious of how we get our animals so we can share that with the public. Aquaculture involves not only breeding the fish, giving them a place to lay their eggs or spawn their eggs, but then there's a collecting aspect of it. Figuring out what kind of eggs you have. So that's looking at the eggs under a microscope and identifying what kind of fish we're even working with. And then there's a whole other side to the food that they need. So they need very microscopic planktonic animals to feed. So it's a huge undertaking, but very cool when you can accomplish it and do it well.
Well, that sounds great. So that was your typical day. So mm-hmm. were there some experiences that give us an experience that sort of something you learned.
Yeah. During the actual days, I got to spend a lot of time with the aquarium. So it was really interesting learning about how they set up their conservation programs and what they could do locally. We do a really good job with our local animals, I think, with finding conservation projects like the plant grow fly, our pond turtle conservation projects. But it was really interesting to see how they set up theirs being on a coast. One of the really interesting projects that I learned about there was their Spot a Shark program, I believe it's called. And so they went out and met with local dive shops. They are a huge ecotourism place. They get a lot of people coming to their islands to dive. The reason for that is they have two currents that go along the coast of North Carolina. So all of the warm water animals coming up from the Caribbean come up the coast, and all of the cold water animals coming down from Greenland and the northern Atlantic all converge in this one area. Basically, North Carolina is called the graveyard of the Atlantic. They have over 500 shipwrecks, which give really good habitat for all of these animals that converge in the same area because of these currents. So they have sand tiger sharks are one of the really cool species that are endangered that they are looking towards finding more information out about them. So it was really cool to kind of hear about ways that they're reaching out to their community, how they can help identify these sharks and figure out, you know, where are these sharks coming from? Where are they going? That kind of information. And that's how they bring their community in to help with their conservation projects.
So obviously when you think of North Carolina and the coast, mm-hmm. sea turtles come to mind.
Yeah.
And there is a picture on our Facebook page of you on the beach mm-hmm. doing some sort of something, and I imagine that's for sea turtles.
Sea
so
turtles.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, of course. So I didn't mention earlier when I was talking about during my day. So the day was filled working in the aquarium, but my evenings were all spent working with sea turtles. So I was staying in Pine Knoll Shores, but there are several different beaches along that island. And the North Carolina Wildlife Resource is basically North Carolina's DNR. They manage all of these different beaches, and each beach has a coordinator. So Michelle Lamping is actually the coordinator that I worked closest with on Atlantic Beach, and she is also an aquarist at the Pine Knoll Shore Aquarium. She's an awesome lady who does a lot of work. with these sea turtles. But basically what we would do is we would go out and check the nests every night. Sea turtle nests usually incubate for about 60 days before they hatch. So what we would do is 5 days prior to their 60 days hatch date, we would sit out there. We'd go out at about 7 o'clock at night, and we'd have two shifts. So from 7 to 10, we'd sit there and watch the nest and wait for the sea turtles to hatch. And what we call boil, the nest would boil, meaning that's when the sea turtles come up out of the sand and walk back to the water. So we would sit there from 7 to 10, and then the second shift was 10 to midnight, but a lot of times, you know, they'd stay till 2, 3 in the morning watching for these sea turtles and making sure that they make it safely out to the water. So we did that several nights, actually every single night except for the weekend, which allowed me to see two separate nests hatch, which was a really cool experience. Other things that we did was we put up shade cloths. One of the biggest issues with sea turtles returning to the ocean is they get distracted by lights. They naturally follow the light of the moon or the tide. So when they see those waves crashing, the light bounces off of them, and normally they would just follow that light out into the water.
Mm-hmm.
The issue is a lot of beach towns have street lamps. People's houses have their lights on. And so the sea turtles will get confused and they'll see those lights and be attracted to that light instead. So that means they'll walk back towards the dunes, walk away from the water, and then generally they don't have high success rate if they're turned around going the wrong way. So what we would do is to put up these shade structures, or shade cloths, and kind of line the nest. It was more of like a V shape, so that it kind of blocked as much light as we could. So all that the turtles mm-hmm. could see once they hatched was the water. And then we just monitored those shade cloths in the nests. And as they hatched, just kind of make sure that it was a flat, even surface. And they had no trouble getting back to the water.
Do you have to turn them around or anything, or do you just let them be?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. The North Carolina Wildlife Resource, they're very adamant about allowing these sea turtles to have the most natural experience going back to the water. They want as little human involvement as possible, which is hard to do when you're already monitoring these nests. So what we would do if there was a sea turtle struggling, we would kind of make a pathway so that they could hopefully figure it out on their own. And of course we had proper PPE, wore gloves and all that stuff, so we weren't handling them directly or anything like that. But basically you kind of just move the sand around and shade them enough that they figured out which way to go. We did notice several turtles that were very confused, and so disoriented, I guess, is the word that they use. So if you start seeing them circling many times or going back, they would kind of give them, you know, 10, 15 minutes to try to figure it out. A lot of times the turtles would wear themselves out. And that's where Michelle kind of partners with the aquarium, is if they have disoriented turtles, or we actually had one that was a runt or too small, we would pull those and take them to the aquarium, let them grow out, have time to rest, and then they would re-release them. But that was one of their big things. They wanted to be as hands-off as possible, but still give them the most success of returning back to the water.
Each nest, how many are in a, I guess, would it be a clutch of eggs? Yeah.
Yeah. So generally it's about 100 eggs per nest. And so that was kind of our base count. And one of the jobs is the nests were hatching, someone had to count how many turtles were going out into the water. So I got to do that one of the days, and it was kind of a little stressful because you've got all these turtles like rushing to the water.
Yeah.
And you're like trying to count them as fast as possible. But so our first nest that we saw hatch, we had about, I want to say it was 54 turtles that we counted going out. And the second nest was 77, so that was a really good success. And then knowing that there's probably another several eggs that haven't hatched, they would wait 3 days after the 60-day time period and excavate the nest. The second excavation we did, we actually found two more live turtles that had just hadn't quite made it to the surface, and they successfully returned to the water. There was two more that was also in that same nest that didn't quite make it. So those were two that they brought back to the aquarium and kind of nursed them back to health. But a lot of times we'll see eggs that are underdeveloped or not quite right. And they just didn't quite make it or were having some troubles for other reasons.
So how do they handle, you know, people wanting to use the beach versus these are, this is sea turtle habitat? How is that handled?
Yeah, so in the springtime when nesting season begins and the females come up out of the water, these same volunteers walk the beaches morning and night to see where the sea turtles are coming up. They're also, one of their big thing is communicating with tourists and locals and telling them, hey, don't flash lights, don't mess with the sea turtles, don't try to touch them or help them, let them, you know, they've been doing this for hundreds and hundreds of years, so they've got it figured out. They don't need any help. So one of the huge thing is just education. But they'll watch and make sure that the females are doing well. And once they see where those nests are laid, they'll actually stake the nest. So they'll just put a little wooden stick right where that nest is and a nice sign that says, hey, this is a sea turtle nest. It is illegal if you mess with this nest or anything like that since they are endangered. But just letting people know, like, be cautious when you're in this area. And then once it gets closer to that 60-day time period, so about day 45, day 50, they will actually block off the nest. They'll do a nice square. Usually it's about a 3-by-3-foot square. So people know, you know, definitely stay out of this area. And then, as I said, when they get closer to that 60-day time period, about 4 or 5 days, then they'll put up those shade cloths. So people know not to kind of go in those areas. Don't really mess around in there, things like that. And actually talking to several locals and tourists, everyone was very, very concerned for the turtles and they wanted the turtles to do well. I didn't really find too many people who were like, I'm going to go mess with these turtles. And, you know, It was really interesting. People really do care about their conservation and their success because sea turtles are very huge in North Carolina.
So you said they're endangered. So how are they doing? Are their numbers increasing? Are they still decreasing? Do we know?
Yeah. So I believe there's 7 different species of turtles, sea turtles. I want to say 5 of them are considered either threatened or endangered. Just varies between the different species. I believe the most endangered are leatherback sea turtles, and they're extremely endangered. Loggerheads are as well. And those loggerheads, greens, and leatherbacks are the 3 most common that make North Carolina their home. But I do believe from the last couple of articles I have read about them, they are doing better, but they're still not quite there yet. Some of their really big issues with these turtles is, one, making sure the nests aren't being disturbed and that the light pollution isn't affecting the hatchlings when they're going out to the water. But once they're out in the water, their biggest threat is pollution. There's a lot of entanglements from fishing lines, sea turtles being hooked by fishermen hooks or swallowing those hooks because they're eating the fish that are caught on these hooks. Other things are boat strikes, people driving their boats and hitting a turtle. We actually went to Sea Turtle Hospital and met a turtle that had 75 stainless steel screws in her back trying to reattach her shell together. So these are some huge impacts that humans have on sea turtles. Another big issue they have in North Carolina, being so up far north, in the wintertime, they get a lot of cold stunned turtles, meaning they're out in the ocean. The ocean and temperatures are dropping because, you know, it's September, October, November, and they haven't made it back down south where it's nice and warm for them. Being reptiles, that's very important. So a lot of times what happens is if people are building different obstacles that normally the sea turtle would just swim right out and start migrating south. If there's things in the way, buildings, all sorts of stuff can kind of confuse the turtles. So if they're stuck in these colder waters, they tend to float and become almost like, well, they're stunned, so they don't move a whole lot. And that's when they're at huge risk for boat strikes because they're floating at the top of the surface and boats come along and hit them. So, you know, there's a lot of human interaction that are affecting them. But I believe as far as hatch numbers, they're doing better.
I was once at an aquarium and there was this sea turtle that was sort of, his back of his shell was sort of floating and he couldn't get below the surface, and there's some problem they can get with where air gets back there. Mm-hmm. Do you have any expertise to tell us what that's all about, if you see that?
It could be a couple different things, but buoyancy issues can have effect if there are boat strikes, cold suns, things like that. So it's usually a buoyancy issue. Like you said, it is just air caught under their shell or in their body themselves, and that doesn't allow them to orient properly. I believe they have a swim bladder as well, just like fish, that helps them with their buoyancy. So they can either release that air and that lets them sink, or they can fill up with air and that helps them float. So it is really important that, you know, they are able to use that capability, because, again, yes, they'll either float to the surface or have trouble going up if they can't. So it is really important. And a lot of those sea turtles are rescued and brought to rehab facilities. And I was lucky enough to actually visit one really cool facility and see how a volunteer-based operation was able to take care of over 40 turtles.
Well, cool. Hey, we only have a couple minutes left.
Yeah.
And so why don't you tell us a couple of things you learned on the trip, mm-hmm. and then wrap it up with something that every one of our listeners can do locally to help out sea turtles.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to boil down everything that I learned to just a few things. But I would say the biggest takeaway that I've had is North Carolina is doing a lot of work to help save their sea turtles, and they're doing a really good job. They care a lot about their local fauna, and they want to help. From not offering plastic straws to making sure people are recycling, not using single-use plastics, to being cautious of, you know, cold stun turtles or calling rehab facilities when they see a problem. So that's one of the big things I learned was North Carolina has a lot of really cool animals and really cool conservation projects that they care a lot about. Something that we can do here, it is hard to think they're sea turtles. They're all the way out in the ocean. How am I really affecting them? But it really is. Pollution is a huge issue. So using your reusing plastics or, you know, cutting them out completely is huge. But another thing is, you know, we like to travel. We go out places. One thing I would suggest is if you're going to go somewhere, do some research before you get there and see what kind of rehab facilities they have for local wildlife and how you can help them. Donate that money. Their sea turtle hospital actually was open to guests. So for $5, you got to go in and see all of the work that they were doing there and learn about sea turtles. So, you know, when you go on vacation to these places, you know, find ways that you can make your vacation valuable to the local people there, because they do a lot of really cool stuff.
Well, it sounds great. And it sounds like you had a very educational and helpful trip, hopefully, to the sea turtles in North Carolina. And so thanks so much for joining us today. And if you want to learn more about Blank Park Zoo, head over to our website, blankparkzoo.com. And, of course, make sure you check out our social media pages like Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. And you can learn more about Dana's trip on our Facebook page, because there were a few posts about that. And then make sure you come out and visit us here at Blank Park Zoo. And you can say hi to all the fish in the aquarium. And we'll see you next time here at Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo.